Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 100 Pounders meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Rita Q, and today it is Wednesday, the 20th of March. I am delighted today to have Mark M with us. Mark hails from New Haven, Connecticut in the USA, I think. Hill will tell you that. And he came to OA in April 2007. I'm now going to hand it over to him to share his experience, strength, and hope. Thanks a million, Mark. Take it away.
Thank you, Rita. Thank you. Hi, my name is Mark. And I am an abstinent compulsive overeater, food addict. Hi, everybody. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to be here with you all. I just have to say, I really love this meeting. I'm actually, as Rita had mentioned, or I mentioned with Rita's question or statement, I am in New Haven, Connecticut. However, my fiance is in Gatineau, Quebec. So I spend lots of time up there, and I am moving up to upper New York near the Adirondacks and near Potsdam, New York. So I think there's not a lot of meetings around there. So I was thinking about kind of coming to this meeting a little bit more. So I'm just God's talking to me. So I'm going to listen. So anyway, and also try and build a community there because there's two colleges. OA would be great there. So anyway, grateful to be here with all of you. I want to thank everybody for being here, and also for those that are doing service. It's so important. When I came into this program, and Rita, you can show the pictures if you want. When I came into this program, April 18, 2007, which is my abstinence date, I was 519 pounds. Now, that is not my highest weight. The highest weight that I had ever weighed myself was 525 pounds. So you can see those pictures. I'm not sure I added the little one. I think I added a picture of me when I was two, because there is a young person that was living free of the bondage of self. What happened afterwards? Well, we'll talk about that. But that shirt, the one I'll just say, the one in the and the one on the bottom left is 2006. And the one that is the orange shirt down in the bottom right, that was a week after coming in the program. So anyway, thank you, Rita, for showing those. So I always want to say, look, this is my story, my own personal journey. Please take what you need and leave the rest. I will tell you that I cannot tell you how much I weigh now, because part of my recovery, given to me by my nutritionist, it was just a suggestion she gave me, was I basically do weigh myself. I weigh myself regularly whenever a doctor or my nutritionist or someone who knows what to do with that number, who needs that number. And I have to tell you, when she asked me to do that, so I get on a scale and I turn around, or I do whatever I need to do to not see that number. And I have to, that is really a strong action, because people, when you're getting on a scale, they don't really think like somebody doesn't want to know what their weight is, right? Kind of thing. So I have to be really vigilant about that, but that is part of my willingness, right? You know, if somebody told me once in this program, and I really believe this, is without willingness, I have no program. And the actions that I've been given, that people with experience, strength, and hope gave to me, and then I take, you know, that is a sign of my willingness, because action is a concrete form of willingness, of surrender. And so this is a program of action, right? And so that's one of the actions I take, but I got to tell you, I really did not think that would be a big deal when they told me that. I said, okay, I'll do that. I didn't really have a problem scale. Man, if you want to find out how much something has power over you, I'm sure you all know this, take it away. It was the same thing when I first started my food plan in this program and started that physical recovery in this program, you know, but I had done that before. It's just I didn't have a program before. So that's the thing. I still have my extra skin. I still have that part. It really, I really have let that go. Really, I have someone in my life that loves me, and that's the most important thing. My only thing for me is I go in a store, I try some pants on, and the ones that fit, I go, or the clothes that go. But I'm going to tell you this, you know, this is like this program, I'll talk about it later. Again, I'll reemphasize it, but this is not a program of learning, it's a program of unlearning. Because the things that I'm unlearning along the way are powerful, because the trying on pants thing and the, I get up in the morning and I put pants on, I swear to God, a lot of times I'm sitting there and there is a part of anxiousness that they're not going to fit. That stuff is still there with me, along with me. That dark passenger rides along, but I have a based on the work I do daily in this program, the surrender that I do daily, that voice is a minimal voice that's just there. It's a part of me, right? But I have a stronger voice now. The voice that when I started doing step two said, for the first time in my life, I remember this voice. And it was always there. I just never listened. I'm going to be okay. You know, it's like the new pair of glasses we put on this program. When, you know, we first come in and we put on these new pair of glasses and it's like acting on life instead of reacting to it. But as we go farther in the program, there's another pair of glasses. And that was, I was okay all along. I just didn't know it. Because that is about faith, right? You know, one thing I was taught in this program too was feelings are not evidence of truth. They're evidence of what I'm putting my faith in. Right? Where is my faith in this moment? In this dark moment where those feelings are going, are just not, maybe not even dark, but they're just feeling, just uncomfortableness or just whatever it is. Where is it when the next kind of knee-jerk reaction that comes up, the part that I'm unlearning, like where is my faith in that moment? Is it in my higher power? Or is it in the lies that I'm telling myself about myself and the world around me? I am a great storyteller. I just tell stories that get me in trouble. That's what I learned. Now I am letting that go every day, right? That is not the case today. What happens is they come up and then I take an action and, you know, I'm all good. So anyway, so what was I like? Essentially, again, spoiler alert on what was I like, where was my faith during this period of my life? So, you know, my problem, right? You know, food is not my problem. Food was my answer. It just happened to be an answer that was killing me, right? What was my problem, right? Well, I can go to the steps and I can say, look, the problem is powerlessness. The solution is a power greater than myself. How do I get that power? Through a program of action. Go back to action again, right? Acting on life instead of reacting to it. But in essence too, I'm going to come back around again on what was my problem. My foundational problem is an over-reliance on self. That's it, right? So this program is really, you know, like on page 88 of the big book, you know, it talks about it meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. And that's what I'm doing every day. Old ideas and new ideas. What are three old ideas and three new ideas to replace them? What are three old actions and three new actions to replace them is in a lot of my inventory work, right? Because I'm challenging myself with myself. I'm looking at that faith part, right? I'm unlearning, right? You know, for a long time, I was in charge of my life for 42 years. For 42 years, I was in charge of my life, right? And here's the thing, that person in charge, I did not love myself. I did not forgive myself. I didn't trust myself. I didn't believe in myself. That is the bondage of self. So how do you think that's going to turn out? It didn't turn out very good for me, right? You know, it's like there's two ways to lead. We talk about being in charge. The two ways to lead, tyranny or inspiration. The higher power I have now, what would God have me be, is all about inspiration for me, not about tyranny. Everything I do in my sort of my place that I learned through my disease was about tyranny. Of self. I'm so hard on myself and I get to let that go every day. I'm much more gentle. I'm doing the best I can and I can do better. That is what I tell myself every day. Right. So basically just, I'm going to kind of try and come back and I didn't time myself. So I'm going to start now, but I'm going to assume what it is. So anyway, I knew I would do that. So anyway, you know, as an adolescent child, I was a compulsive eater for as long as I can remember. And I had a God-sized hole for as long as I can remember. You know, we talk about fear, you know, like in the big book, there's a part that says, like, on a daily basis, I felt rejected in life, that I didn't belong, right? And for me, you know, the key word there is felt again, right? Feelings are not evidence of truth. They're evidence of what I'm putting my faith in. And so I find that fear was like it ruled my life. Right, that this was what it was, and again, I want to say self-centered fear, ruled my life, right? There are some valid fears, right, for my physical safety. But in my experience, I found that fear tend to fall into three kind of categories, three buckets, I believe. Not getting what I want, losing what I have, being found out. And for me, the one, all of them are firing off, they fired off all the time. But for me, the one that was the most powerful that ruled my life was being found out, that I was not okay. Again, free, in Freedom from Bondage in the Big Book, I remember being lonely, terrified, and hurt. And that is a lot of the way I live my life, right? So, all of the binge eating that I did in my life, the majority of it, because I did binge in front of people, but the majority of it was really in secret, right? Being found out, hiding, shutting down, turning off the lights, shutting the doors, just going to a hole, right? Like a cocoon, right? And I remember, I remember like, and so this, I talked about like unlearning and learning. That is some of the stuff I'm unlearning. Like during COVID, what was really interesting is like basically like, this program brought me alive. And then what was interesting in COVID, when everything went back to being in a kind of a small space, it was easy for me to go there. It was easy. This is the thing. My disease is like, it'll take 2 seconds to come back. Love has to be learned again and again and again, but hate needs no instruction. Fear needs no instruction. It's just waiting to be provoked. It is essentially like that with my disease. It'll take 2 seconds. And it's so easy. It was like, here's this thing where everything is shutting down, going in a small space. And I'm not saying I liked it, and I'm not saying that it was good, but it's like, for me, it was so easy to do that. And a lot of the work I had to do was connecting with my nutritionist and connecting with my sponsor and connecting with people around me to stay alive in that moment. Because in my disease, I got very good at living with the crumbs that I gave myself. Right? I remember in ninth grade, I went to my first pay and weigh, and with this concept, if I lose the weight, I'll be okay. Right? And I got in and I had a food plan. It really all I got was a food plan and a little bit of support, kind of a thing. But I went in there, I lost the weight. And so I was 200 pounds at that point in ninth grade. I went down to 149 pounds, lost 51 pounds. And I thought, okay, everything's gonna be okay. And what happened? What happened to that point? Same thing that happens everywhere else, and it is a testament to the 4-step work that I do, is life is out there. But to me, things didn't go the way I wanted. So I used that as validation that I was not okay again. Everything came back to that piece of validation. I had no, my higher power, the faith that I had. When I first came to this program, I didn't think I had any faith. I had a tremendous amount of faith. Again, where was my faith? In my higher power, or the lies that I was telling myself about myself and the world around me. And so in that moment, I shut down. And I remember thinking that I remember like basically making my brand, my life, my sort of this moment where I said to myself, I will never have what other people have. Going out, on dates, having a girlfriend, like going to parties, having close friends, all of those things. And so that I would always be on the outside of life looking in. And so then I just checked out. And I almost made it this thing where I'm in the design world. So I almost made this thing like I'm supposed to be that struggling like artist and that sort of like whatever that I made it my brand, and that I was supposed to have this pain. It was gonna make my work better and da-da-da-da, all this kind of stuff. And that's the way I lived for a while. And so again, living on the outside of life looking in, and I got very good at living with the crumb myself. Living with the crumbs I gave myself, and what I focus on grows. Right. And so that's kind of the way I kind of started on this life journey. And, so not long after that, I gained the weight back. Right. I went up to 200 pounds, 250 pounds. Then I lost that weight right before I went into college. I went to 175 pounds. And here I am in college. You know, I don't have a room. You know, I'm not staying with my parents, and I have my room by myself, and I have a little bit of money, and so I could kind of shut the door, turn off the lights, and check out, kind of a thing. And guess what happened? By the time I and I'm also coming in with a God-sized hole, thinking I needed to know stuff before they taught me stuff. Like if they brought up a concept, it was like because I didn't know it when they said it, I was like, "See, Mark, you can't do this, right?" You know, and so I shut down. So by the time I got out of college, I was 300 pounds. I started my first job, you know, in 1990, and you know, here I am. Denial of the truth leads to destruction. So here I am in the middle of this place, and I've got this God-sized hole, and it's always the way this worked. This was a pattern in my cycle of life. Was here's this opportunity, right? You know, I went seeking a job. I went for the first person that basically said they wanted me. Why? Because they wanted me. I don't think I ever thought about it any more than that. And then I got this job. And as soon as I got the job, because it's this opportunity, and it's like I'm trying to convince myself that I'm okay. As soon as I got the job, guess what happens? Oh my God, they're going to find out. And that's the way I spent all of my life. And so I would go into work so super early in the morning. Like really early, like 5 in the morning, like 4 in the morning or something sometimes. I turn the music on, I do all this stuff because the point for me is I needed to get good by the time they got there. And I lived in panic. And then here's the crazy thing. What did I learn at that point? Something really interesting is when the sun came up, I got nervous. That is not the way it's supposed to work. Right. But it basically, as soon as the sun came up, I knew what it was like. I leaned into the pain that was coming. Right. So at the end of the day, I would then, go home, gather all my supplies, stop at fast food restaurants on the way home, and stop at grocery stores and get a whole bunch of my supplies. And I'd go in, shut the door, turn off the lights, turn on TV, and just check out. And there were times like basically that I wouldn't come out until the next Monday. And I would come out, and this was in Atlanta, Georgia. I'd come out in this beautiful sunshine, and it was like I was blinded. It was like I was a bat. I was learning to not be in the world, right? So and I really believe that is really what oblivion is when we talk about this program. I just basically checked out, you know. So, you know, as it says in our Overeaters Anonymous 12 steps and 12 traditions, I escaped from life's problems in excess food. I procrastinated, I hid, and I ate. I hid from my pain by eating compulsively so I didn't have to learn from my mistakes. I never grew up. It's like I'm Peter Pan, but in a whole nother way, a darker way, maybe even, you know. So what happened? So it's funny. There's a quote that I always think about on what happened. It's only on the brink that people find the will to change. Right. Right. You know, and the spoiler alert in this is the gift of desperation is what happened. G-O-D. Right. You know, that's what happened. I always say at moments, at times that, you know, like I talk about, like God talked to me for the first time. And I realized later on in my program that wasn't true. That it was really in these moments of this gift of desperation that sort of like that I was at the turning point, right? And I abandoned myself to God completely. It was because I listened to God for the first time. God was always there. I have this bracelet that I got long time ago when I first came to the program. It's not a special thing. But it says on it indivisible, and it was meant for some other thing, right? So, but it says indivisible. And to me, what that represents is I am always connected to God unless I turn away. God has always been there for me. I'm the one that creates the space. So that's important, you know, and so, you know, the first requirement, and this again from the big book on page 60, the first requirement is that we become convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And I think the other thing and the important thing in the entering this journey is that I had to realize that I had two choices in this stage of my life is where I started learning that. I had two choices, living life on a spiritual basis or death by my disease. I just didn't know that other option at the time. but I was learning the death by my disease part, because at this point I could barely walk. The seats and seat belts and movie theaters and planes and restaurants, I couldn't fasten them around me in my car. My blood pressure was crazy out of control, like 181 over 117. Borderline diabetes. My cholesterol was out of the, crazy off the charts. I had sleep apnea, plantar fasciitis. I couldn't even take basic hygiene care of myself. It was difficult, which is an embarrassing thing, but again, the consequences. So in 2006, and I call this the posture of surrender, right? So I love that word posture, because there's a posture of faith too, right? And it's usually action. But I was in a hospital, and I had my blood pressure was out of control, and I thought I was having a heart attack. And it took me 3 months to get in the to kind of make the decision to get in the hospital. It shows you how stubborn I am. But I was sitting there by three doctors standing in front of me, telling me that, Mark, you're going to die if you keep doing what you're doing. Here's the crazy thing. I always say this in my story. I remember telling myself I needed to be afraid that what they were telling me. I was scared, but not, and I, if I'm honest, I was probably a little scared to die, but that was not the big scare in there. First, I'm standing in front of three people that could see me. And for me in that time, what I told myself was they're seeing this person that's just a mess. They're seeing this person that is a failure. They're seeing this person, right? They're not saying that. I'm saying that. Right. But that was scary. It was like a deer in the headlights kind of a moment for me. But the other thing, the more powerful thing, and it was underlying all of that, was what they were asking me to do, to give up my friend food. Right. Because I could not imagine what that life would be like. Right. And so, but again, and they gave me a food plan. And I said, I'm going to do it this time. Right. I'm gonna do this, right? And so I took the food plan, and a month after that, I was in a hotel room eating enough food for probably a family of 12 to 18 or 12 to 8 or something. I, 8 to 12. I until I couldn't walk, and that was kind of my thing. I was on a business thing, but something shifted in that moment for the first time in my life, and this is where I said the whole thing about I always say God talked to me in that moment, and He did, but the reality is, I listened. And for the first time in my life, I said, I can't do this by myself. I need to get help. Right. And for someone that lives his life by managing other people's perceptions of himself, which is an addiction of its own within me, right? This, God-sized hole. That's a pretty big thing. That's a gift of desperation. And so I asked for help, and it took me a year to get into this program. I actually came in through a treatment center, which was really good. I got out of the toxic space, but I was only there 2.5 months. They gave me a, I got a food plan that addressed my compulsive eating and compulsive food behavior things the things that I need to abstain from, my alcoholic foods and behaviors, if you will. And then I got some good support there. The biggest thing they gave me is that was the first day that I came into this program, and like I came into this program, into my first OA meeting, not knowing I was going to an OA meeting till probably 2 hours before that, which was a perfect way for me to come in, right? Because I couldn't balk at it, I mean, I always have a choice. I could have. But it made it was a good way for me to come in. And but also too, I had surrendered the night before. By the way, the night before I came in treatment, I went on a binge. I went to a hotel, I went to my hotel and went to a restaurant, and walked to a restaurant, and I stood in front of the person, and I was like, and this was after the person was talking to me about the program, and he talked to me about the 12 steps, and I remember him talking about steps 8 and 9, and I just got terrified, and I started to almost cry. And well, I actually did cry, but then I got in my car and then cried all the way to the hotel, right? And so I went to this restaurant, and I was ordering food, and I said to the person, I said, I wonder what she wants, like as if someone else is with me, so that I could order more food. And I took it back to the hotel. I ate it, and then I was doing my eighth and nice. I was doing my eighth step. I wasn't even in program, but I was writing all these people I had harmed. I mean, for a person that manages other people's perception of self, there's where that big piece is. So, but that piece, when I came in, all of the stuff that happened before and that piece made me entirely ready. You know, and so when I came in the program and I came to my first meeting, you know, what was beautiful is I entered this room was it was a hospital with 60 people in this room,
5 minutes
this OA
left.
meeting. Yeah, I figured I wasn't going to give 60 people in this room, and they said, "Are there any newcomers?" And I said, "Hi, I'm Mark." And 60 people said, "Hi, Mark." That was healing for me. And the second thing they said is, and I remember this, if before the came I came in the program, I don't know what my thing was, God, it was like almost spiritual apathy or something. I don't know what you would call it, but I remember them saying, a God of your understanding. And I remember myself saying, I can do that. And I gotta tell you, before I came in the room, I had to run the other way. And that was again, that was sort of like me listening to God again for the first time in my life. And it was a huge sign of my surrender. And so what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to kind of skip ahead just a little bit. Listen, well, we'll do the, if I can, I'll do the first four steps here real quick. But look, what I find very important in this program is the fact, like for me, there's something powerful about the fact that we have the core principles in there. And the reason why I say that is that like let's take step one, honesty. When I was talking to my sponsor about the promises at one point, the OA, the big book promises, right? And I was talking about how amazing they are. And he said, yeah, that's one half of the promises. I'm like, what? And he never really told me. And I think in a rally, I think he was talking about the bedevilments, but he didn't tell me, and he let me go seek it. And what I kind of went and did is I wrote the promises backwards. If I am not painstaking about this phase of my development, I won't be amazed before I'm halfway through. And then I just walked all the way through that and wrote those out. Then that led to me go, okay, we have 12 core principles. What are the anti-principles of that? And for some reason, that gave me great clarity. So when we're talking about step one and we're talking about, you know, step one, I can't, right? Step two, God can. Step three, I think I'll let God. But if we talk about honesty, well, what's the opposite of that? Dishonesty. And if I look at all of the opposites of those things, that's where I lived. The opposites of our 12 core principles, right, are like my monster making kit. Right? It keeps me in my disease. If I want to know it, what's really beautiful is I can really define what step is important here by looking at the opposite of those and seeing where I'm at in that. So obviously honesty, dishonesty, hope, despair, and there are other things one could say in that. These words, you do it for yourself and find your own words. But here's one I'm going to tell you: faith. What's the opposite of faith? No faith? I found that's not true. The opposite of faith is faith. It's just what is that faith in? Which is a powerful thing. So where is my faith in my moment? Is it in self-reliance or God-reliance? And that changes everything. So you know, for me, the biggest thing of honesty that I had is I began to kind of start living a life that had better boundaries around my food, like humility, right? I got a food plan and it gave me humility, right size, no greater than, no less than, not gluttony, not deprivation, not restriction. You know, it gave me a plan of the basically of my needs, and I operated on that. The other thing is, you know, for me in the middle of honesty is that I cannot control this by my own willpower. Right. And it's a chronic disease. It was a hard thing for me here. Once I'm a pickle, I can't go back to being a cucumber. Now I am a beautiful pickle. So, you know, like this is a good thing. But the other thing of that hope and faith part in step two, like step two, God can, that act as if is a big thing. It says in our 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, the willingness to act on faith then was the key to step two. Willingness and act. You know, I have no willingness. If I have no willingness, I have no program, right? You know, and that whole thing of like Step two, I had to act as if to get through it. Now, step three, it's funny. I talked about that faith thing. It's like I live my life by like truth in a blender, right? That storytelling thing. And so for me, this is just always about me realigning myself to God every day, right? Aligning myself. I'm gonna talk real quickly about step four, even though it's not enough, because that one changed my life. All the steps changed my life, working them every day. This is a design for living that works in rough going. So, by the way, if I ever say to myself, well, life is tough, it's going tough, so I don't have time to do the steps. Well, okay, that's not how it works, right? So it is a design for living that works in rough going. If you have a rough going on, work the steps, and that rough going is going to get easier. That's how that works. Usually what I've been told is if it's a rough going, double down on the steps. And I thought, what are you talking about? I did that and it changed everything. So anyway, just real quick on step four of courage,
That
right?
was 30
Courage.
minutes, but keep going.
I'm going to finish very quickly here. It's just, there's one thing I wanted to bring in. It's really probably a, when I was brought into this, into step four, and I was brought in a couple of different ways. The second time, kind of working my, and I'm going to talk just about resentment inventory, of working my resentment inventory, kind of like it is in the big book. What I found was so powerful. Like, again, it is a spiritual axiom. These are some really important things in there. It is a spiritual axiom, that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. That's a really important thing. But I just wanted to, this out of step four in the AA 12 and 12 is huge, because they talk about instincts a lot more. And when I do a four column resentment inventory, the first two columns I'm resentful at person, institution, or principle. Second is we asked ourselves why we were angry, right? Those two things of that person, principle, institution, and that why, that's just life in front of me. The line between column two and three is a reliance line. Where is my reliance? Is it in God or is it in self? Because what happens in those next two columns is very different based on where my reliance is. Because the column three for me is, was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations, which had been interfered with? So I always ask myself, like, this affects or threatens what are these instinctual drives that they're God-given. And so out of that AA 12 and 12, it says alcoholics especially should be able to see that instinct run wild within themselves is the underlying cause of their destructive drinking. Instincts on the rampage balk at investigation. The minute we make a serious attempt to probe them, we are liable to suffer severe reactions. But the other thing at the very start of that chapter, creation gave us instincts for a purpose. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. And later on, it says, surely they're God-given. And the reason I say that is because God gave me these, but it's when I'm not connected to God that I feel they're threatened, that situation, the first two columns, are threatening my life in some way. And so that is when I go to the fourth column to try and fix it. To try and make it happen the way I want it to, instead of relying on God's will. But here's the crazy thing, and I'm going to end on this. The crazy thing of that is, whatever it was that was threatened, I end up getting the exact opposite of that by going to my character defects. I really believe my character defects are, if I want to give it a different name, they are diminishments. They diminish my life, they make it smaller, and they harm others and myself. Right. So I will end on that. I just with two things. This is not a program of learning. It's a program of unlearning. This is not a program of figuring things out. It's a program of letting go. Godspeed to you all. Thanks.
Oh, Mark, that was just beautiful. What a message of depth and weight. I'm just going to read a little paragraph out of the big book to summarize what Mark said. It's page 511, and the story is called Gutter Bravado. So today I'm much more comfortable with life as Alcoholics Anonymous has promised, ROA, and I know they're right when they say it keeps getting better. My circumstances have steadily improved as my spiritual life grows and matures. Words cannot begin to describe the feeling in my heart as I sometimes ponder how much my life has changed, how far I've come, and how much there is yet to discover. And though I'm not sure where my journey may take me next, I know I owe it to the grace of God and the three words of the 12 steps: continue, improve, and practice. And one more thing they told me, humility is the key.